Community, you know, I know a lot of people in a lot of places and just try to help out everywhere I can.
White and other volunteers are joined by inmates from state work camps who also help with sandbagging. The crowd wears colorful rain ponchos and jackets. As rain falls and the temperature drops, the only shelter is a single porta potty and a small shed where Randy Dolan is fielding phone calls and overseeing the site. He's the Scott County Drainage and Levee District Commissioner. Dolan says the Illinois River is expected to soon rise over the height of the area levee.
It's just a big race right now.
Another challenge?
Manpower. Having enough manpower to keep everything going. Weather's, you know, I mean, everybody's working. It's miserable out there, but the guys out there is giving it all they got, so they're working hard.
Dolan says workers started on sandbags for the levee on Saturday, and he doesn't know when their work will end. He says the last time this much work had to be done to combat river levels was over a decade ago. North of here in Maridosha, more volunteers and inmates from the Clayton Prison Work Camp are working on filling up sandbags. Bob Fitzsimmons is at the site near a bridge that crosses the river. He's the Jacksonville-Morgan County Emergency Manager. Fitzsimmons says plans are being followed as much as possible, despite the quick rising of water levels.
We have most of all of our bags pre-placed out in critical areas so that if we hit a certain top or we have a breach or a problem, they're right there already for us.
While he remains hopeful, Fitzsimmons admits he expects at least one breach in the levee that could affect farmland, roadways, and a few homes, which have already been evacuated. He says there is new technology being used as backup to help in efforts to stave off the floodwater. A couple miles south of Maridosha, Dennis Barkmeyer, who oversees flood projects for a company called HESCO, is helping set up that technology. The barriers being put in place have been used to fight floods globally, and Barkmeyer says the barriers have served a different purpose as well.
This is the same product that has protected the U.S. military in Iraq and Afghanistan for the last 20 years. We are the civil side of the company, where we use it for elevating levees, emergency flood protection. We're the go-to product for the Corps of Engineers nationwide.
These containers are 4 feet tall blocks of wire basket that are covered with a type of waterproof high-grade canvas. Their insides are being filled with sand. So far, 2,000 feet of the barrier are already set up. That number will be doubled. Barkmeyer says the blocks, which fit together like Legos, serve more of a large-scale purpose, and that an area that could take a few weeks to sandbag will be protected in just about a day's worth of time. About 10 miles away is a small town called Naples. A look over the levee shows the water is getting dangerously close to the top. A restaurant on the other side is partially submerged in the water. Jim Freeman is helping two other men at yet another sandbagging site in this town.
We just filled an inloader bucket that is hauling sandbags down to where we're laying them. We should have trucks doing this, but we're running short.
Freeman's a volunteer, but as a local farmer, he's one of the many community members out today trying to protect their land, homes, and businesses from floodwaters. Workers seem tired but optimistic. That is, until you ask what they think about the weather forecast. I'm Rachel Otwell.
You're listening to WILL Radio. Some Illinois gay rights groups are now applying their own political pressure in the fight to overhaul the nation's immigration system. WBEZ's Alex Keefe has the report.
Bipartisan cooperation was the order of the day as Chicago Congressman Luis Gutierrez and Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan plugged their immigration reform ideas at a downtown luncheon on Monday. Gutierrez, a liberal Democrat, and Ryan, a former GOP vice presidential nominee, actually agreed on a lot until somebody in the audience asked whether Gutierrez thought the immigration changes would recognize same-sex relationships.
And I will fight for it, but I do not believe it will be in a bill.
So I'm going to stick with just the immigration stuff here.
Congressman Ryan, the second voice, opposes same-sex marriage. And that exchange illustrates the political difficulty of recognizing so-called bi-national gay couples in U.S. immigration law. Recognition would mean a same-sex relationship could be grounds to grant legal status to a foreign spouse or to prevent deportation. And while Gutierrez says he supports the idea, he doesn't think it would pass. That political calculus doesn't sit well with Julio Rodriguez, who chairs the LGBTQ Immigration Rights Coalition of Chicago.
You can't pick and choose when you want to be our allies.
Rodriguez says House lawmakers shouldn't be so quick to exclude gay couples from an immigration overhaul.
We've helped elect many of those folks that are sitting in Congress who are our allies. We've provided them financial resources. We've provided people on the ground. And we expect a return on that investment.
Congressman Gutierrez, for his part, says he wants to include same-sex couples. But as he tries to navigate the Republican-led House, he says it's a numbers game.
And you can see who makes up the House of Representatives. And you can see that the votes are not there.
Gutierrez points out the immigration bill in the U.S. Senate, where Democrats hold a majority, does not include recognition for same-sex couples.
You shouldn't pander. You shouldn't raise false expectations. That's not what I expect from a friend and an ally.
Gutierrez says he hopes to introduce an immigration overhaul in the House in a few weeks, but the whole question could be moot by the end of June, when the U.S. Supreme Court is expected to rule on the federal definition of marriage. I'm Alex Keefe.
You're listening to WILL AM 580, and right now it is our spring pledge drive, and to bring you great local content like that, content from across the state of Illinois, we have to partner with stations in Peoria and Decatur and Chicago and just all over the state. And to do that, it takes resources. So if you'd like to continue to hear local stories from your community, stories that are really not being covered anywhere else, please consider making a donation. Think about how valuable it is to you to hear local voices on the radio. 217-244-9455 or pledge online at willpledge.org. And I have a bit of an update on how we're doing on the campaign. Right now we have raised $63,872, so we've had 332 people donate. That is a terrific number. That is much better than many of the fundraising drives that we've had here at WILL in the recent past. And we really appreciate everybody who's called in so far to donate, but we still have quite a ways to go. We still have to raise, if I'm doing my back of the napkin calculations properly here, about $56,000. So if you value WILL, if you listen every day, think about how much that means to you. Give us a call, 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org. Now, this is particularly pertinent for people who are new listeners to the station. I mean, just think about your experience finding out about WILL and finding out about public radio. Maybe you were flipping the dial one day and you came across a story, say, on All Things Considered, or an interview on Fresh Air, or a commentary on Morning Edition. And you got home, you're in your car, or you got to work, and you stopped the car and you couldn't get out. You stopped in the driveway. This is something that happens all the time. These are called driveway moments, and it's those kind of moments that it's really hard to actually place a value on them. But think about how important it is to you to have those kind of lovely, graceful moments in the middle of the day where you learn something completely unexpected about the world. Give us a call, 217-244-9455, or pledge online at willpledge.org. You're listening to WILL.
WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House at Green and Lincoln, three blocks from the Engineering Quad. Hendrick House Catering can tailor a menu and price for events from corporate box lunches to weddings, business meetings, and other special events. More information is available at 365-8004.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 24th of April, 2013. It's the birthday of the mystery novelist Sue Grafton, born Louisville, 1940, went to the University of Louisville, thought about becoming a lawyer, but her father was an attorney. He told her not to go to law school. It was too boring. She got married at the age of 18, divorced, married again a few years later, started her career writing screenplays until her agent told her that she was good at writing character but not at plot, so she decided to focus all her energy on writing plots. And writing mystery novels seemed like a good way to do that. One day she was reading through Edward Gorey's illustrated book, The Gashly Crumb Tinies, about children dying in bizarre ways, which begins, A is for Amy, who fell down the stairs, B is for Basil, assaulted by bears. And Grafton decided this would be her hook. And in 1982, she published A is for Alibi. It was followed by B is for Burglar, C is for Corpse, D is for Deadbeat, and on down the line. the novels starring a private eye named Kinsey Millhone, who loves fast food, always carries a gun, and distrusts intimate relationships. It's the birthday of Robert Penn Warren, born in Guthrie, Kentucky, 1905, whose grandfather had a tobacco farm where the boy spent his summers. The grandfather loved books, liked to quote poetry while he tended his garden, liked to sit with his grandson under a cedar tree and tell stories of fighting in the Confederate Army, and he drew pictures of the battles in the dirt. Robert Penn Warren went off to Vanderbilt, where his roommate was the poet Alan Tate. Warren graduated, took a teaching job at Louisiana State in Baton Rouge, and a year later, Governor Huey Long was assassinated there at the Capitol. Warren wrote a play in verse about a corrupt and charismatic governor, and then he made the play into a novel. All the King's Men came out in 1946, was a big bestseller, won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction. Warren said it was not about politics. He said that his main character, Willie Stark, a governor who was assassinated, was not meant to be Huey Long, but practically everyone else assumed that it was. Here's a poem for today by Ogden Nash, Pretty Halcyon Days. How pleasant to sit on the beach, on the beach, on the sand in the sun, with ocean galore within reach, and nothing at all to be done. No letters to answer, no bills to be burned, no work to be shirked, no cash to be earned. It is pleasant to sit on the beach with nothing at all to be done. How pleasant to look at the ocean, democratic and damp, indiscriminate. It fills me with noble emotion to think I am able to swim in it. To lave in the wave, majestic and chilly, tomorrow I crave, but today it is silly. It is pleasant to look at the ocean, tomorrow perhaps I shall swim in it. How pleasant to gaze at the sailors as their sailboats they manfully sail, with the vigor of Vikings and whalers in the days of the Viking and whale. They sport on the brink of the shad and the shark. If it's windy, they sink. If it isn't, they park. It is pleasant to gaze at the sailors, to gaze without having to sail. How pleasant the salt anesthetic of the air and the sand and the sun leave the earth to the strong and athletic and the sea to adventure upon. But the sun and the sand no contractor can copy. We lie in the land of the lotus and poppy. We vegetate calm and aesthetic on the beach, on the sand, in the sun.